At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Such a recognisable piece of music, isn't it? Absolutely brilliant. Joining us on the line now is Timothy Bentinck, who has acted on radio, TV, film and stage, and is best known as the voice of David Archer in BBC Radio 4's The Archers, a role he landed in 1982. He's performing in a play called Brexit in London from the end of this month. His autobiography is also now out, called Being David Archer and Other Unusual Ways of Earning a Living. Welcome to the show, Timothy.
Good morning. Hello. Thank you very much for asking me.
It's a pleasure. It's great to have you with us. How do you feel when you hear that music? Does it annoy you now?
No, I'm kind of used to it. It's strange. When we started doing it, they used to play the music in live into the studio just before you started speaking, so you get to hear it over and over and over again. I'm kind of used to it now. It's very familiar and very comforting.
Yes, it's comforting to a lot of people, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. People say that it's a comfort. It's something to come home to after the rigours of the day, and they come back to the nice, cosy snuggliness of Ambridge, occasionally interspersed with a bit of, high drama and things, but not too much nastiness and not too much sort of aggro and conflict. It's usually a place that they think of as home, as another family, and which sort of, in a way it is for me as well. It's a radio family.
Yeah. And do you think that's one of the charms of it? Why it's got such a big following and why people love it so much? Because there isn't so much drama and hatred that goes on that we see in a lot of TV soaps, perhaps.
Well, I think that's the difference. That's sort of meant to be the difference, in a way. And people often say, when we had a change of editor who used to work on EastEnders, they all came along and said, I hope he doesn't turn it into EastEnders, which, he didn't. It's not like it's something you catch, like a disease, EastEnders. It's a different thing. It's not to say that there isn't, drama in it. As I say, it needs that every now and again. The whole nature of story, of drama, is about conflicts. Ultimately, you can't just have it going along and it's the flower and produce show all the time, because otherwise it would get boring. So it needs a mix. It needs a mix of comedy, of drama, of conflict and fun. It needs a good mix up of things. Mm-hmm. I think.
So when you went along to that first audition in 1982 and got the part, did you have any idea how big it would become and that you'd be doing it over 30 years later?
No, absolutely not. No, I hadn't actually ever heard the programme when I went for the audition. I had to sort of busk it slightly and pretend that I knew what I was talking about, because my mum was a what you might call a dum-de-dum-de click person. The moment she heard that theme tune coming on, she leapt to the radio and turned it off. So I'd never actually heard it at all, knew nothing about it at all. And the agent said, do you want to go up for The Archers? And I said, what's that? And she said, it's a programme about farming. And I said, well, I know a bit about farming because I used to work on farms. And she said, that's not necessary. It's drama. So I said, I'll go along for it. So, I turned up and winged it, really. And it's only actually, I thought it was because of my brilliant acting that I got it. In fact, as it turns out, I've actually heard the guy who played it before me only recently. I'd never heard him before. Somebody said, this is you, back in 1981. I said, I wasn't in it in 1981. She said, well, this is you. And I listened. And this guy, whose name is David Karivic, who was David Archer before me, I listened to him and went, my God, he sounds very like me. So that was, I think, the reason I got the part, was because I was a voice match.
And how would you describe doing drama on radio, you know, compared to doing drama on TV and on stage? It must be a very different thing.
It is. There's a sort of different technique to it. Because you can't be seen, you have to suggest things with your voice. Somebody once said you have to be able to raise one eyebrow with your voice. So you kind of lift things a little bit. It's not totally a naturalistic performance. You have to suggest the environment in the way that you do things. You have to put a little bit of effort into your body when you're, you know, a bit more than you would do in your voice than you would be in vision. You know, if you're sort of knocking in fence posts, you have to kind of make an effort, you know, to match the effort that goes with it. You have to paint a picture for the listener. And if you're looking out over, you know, over Lakey Hill and you're looking at the beauty of the English countryside, and there you are actually standing in a studio in front of a microphone with a script in your hand, you have to sort of see it in your mind's eye, because if you don't see it, then the listener won't. And also the other thing is, because you're reading it, you've got a script in your hand, you've got to be able to lift that off the page and make it sound as though you've just thought of it rather than something you're just reading. So there is a certain technique to it, which is different from other things, yeah.
And the fact that you have a script, so therefore presumably don't need to learn lines, does that make the whole process much easier, or do you just have to concentrate in a different way?
Well, to be honest, after 36 years of doing it, I do know what I'm doing now, so it isn't nerve-wracking in the way.
No.
I'm just about to do this play Brexit, and I hadn't been on stage for 8 years. We just did it up in Edinburgh for 4 weeks, and that is a bit of a shock to the system when you've not done it for a while. Learning those lines and having to make the brain work a bit more, and having adrenaline rushing through you—that's a whole different ball game. It's not hard, to be absolutely honest. It's fun, you know. It's really good fun. Yeah.
And with regards to all the sound effects and the team of people that are doing all of that, does that come in after you? Do you see any of that happening?
No, we do it absolutely in real time. All the sound effects are played in at the time that you're recording it. So what happens, I mean, at the end of, it takes about just over two hours to record a 15-minute episode. And what they have in the can at the end of that is pretty much what goes out. They might have to do occasional post effects. In Homefront, which was a series all about the First World War, which has been going on for the last 5 years, they do much more post-production.
Mm.
But with the Archers, no, they play in the sound of the, you know, the birds, the tractors, the ambience of the air, you know, in the air, the a car approaching, all that, and door slamming and things like that. All that happens in real time, and then there's a person in the studio with you called the spot effects person. Who does all the sort of chinking of teacups and opening of Arga doors and fridge doors and things like that, all in real time. Yeah, it's a team effort.
Mm. And because you haven't got the visual side of things, if you are doing a dramatic headline, does it make it harder to kind of bring that emotion to the part because you haven't got the visual side along with it?
Well, no, I mean, as I say before, there is, most of it's quite easy. Every now and again, we get a chance to do some really sort of, you know, heavy, not heavy, but serious drama, some really, you know, good stuff. And you have to lift it off the page. You have to make it real, because otherwise people won't believe it. And, you know, the fun of it is to turn these words that are on the page in front of you into a reality that people, you know, with on their headphones or on their speakers or in their car, are part of, you know, they become a part of it.
Mm. With regards to other roles that you've done, I know something which was must have been a great experience was playing a Time Lord in Doctor Who.
Well, that was a little credit that I just threw in. I thought, you know, those things that you tick off the bucket list of an actor, the things that you want to do, is, you know, yeah, play a Time Lord. I mean, it's slightly tenuous. I actually revoiced a monk. So there were these monks in the previous series, these very, very tall guys with faces that looked like they'd been fried. The guys, he was a performance artist, but he didn't do the voice of it. He just had this sort of round, a round shape, which was his mouth, out of which I had to then
put this really, really deep voice into.
So it wasn't actually my body. I have yet to actually be embodied in Doctor Who. I am only the, you know, typical radio actor. I am only the voice of the monks in Doctor Who. I do. There's a production company called Big Finish that do Doctor Who audios, and they're being broadcast on Radio 4 now as well. So I'm in quite a few of those. But yeah, so no, it's a slightly tenuous credit that I'm a Time Lord, but it's you know, I'll take that.
Absolutely. And talking about being a recognisable voice, if people travel on the Piccadilly line, they might recognise your voice.
Well, not anymore, unfortunately. I've been axed from Mind the Gap. Yes, I used to be the voice of Mind the Gap on the Piccadilly line for about 16 years. And all the station announcements, you know, please stand clear of the closing doors. The next station is Holborn, you know, all that kind of thing. And, yeah, I turned up one day for a voice job, and the agent said, I said, what is it? She said, it's station announcements. So I went, oh, okay. So I turn up at the studio, and I said, hello. And he said, what is it? I said, it's station announcements. I said, what, Mind the Gap? And he said, yeah.
You were joking.
I went, you're kidding me, really? He said, yeah, no, you Mind the Gap. I said, great. So I did this thing. I spent, you know, about 2 hours there doing all these station announcements. And then I went, came out, and I got on the phone to the agent. I said, blimey, how much was that? She's thinking, you know, huge amounts of money for this. She said, 200 quid. It's a £200 buyout. I went,
no.
You're joking. Yeah, for 16 years, they had me Mind the Gapping for 200 quid. I was robbed, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. I bet every time you were on the train, you were like, yeah, all right, yeah, I get it. How did you say it then?
Well, it was, I mean, there's this guy, there's the classic one, which was recorded, I think, during the war in 1940, which is Mind the Gap. You know, that one, that's the classic.
Yeah.
That's the god of Mind the Gap. And all of us are sort of lesser Mind the Gappers, so mine was... Please mind the gap. This is Holborn. The next station is Covent Garden. Please stand clear of the closing doors. So it's very kind of, you know, friendly and chatty and things like that.
Yes.
And, I mean, I got taken to task about saying Holborn, actually, because when I was doing it, I was being kind of considerate about foreigners. Because, you know, Holborn, which has got an L in it.
Mm.
And I sort of say, well, that's the way we say it, Holborn. And so I kind of put a slight L into it. I went, Holborn, just a little bit of an L, just to sort of help. You know, non-English speakers. And people used to take me to task and say, you don't say Holborn like Holborn. You say Holborn, you know. Can't win.
Oh, you can't. You absolutely can't. So this play that you're... I know you said you did it in the summer. You're doing it again in a week or so. Brexit, it's called. Is that as much fun as it sounds?
It's very funny. It's a mixture of funny and clever, because it's written by... a guy called, two writers, Robert Kahn and Tom Selinsky. And Robert is a politico. I mean, he's a political insider, so and he knows his stuff. I mean, he really knows his stuff. So it's not written by somebody who just, you know, reads the newspapers and is taking the mickey out of it.
Mm.
It's clever. It's an insider's view. And also what's really difficult for them, which seems to work, is that he wrote this. They wrote it last year, last summer. Where are we now? It's 2018. Yeah, no, so about sort of 8 months ago. And that was true then. And they've made a few little alterations to it. In fact, we started rehearsing it yesterday for this new run, and there are a few line changes, but not that many, because the thing has stayed the same. You know, this was the thing about it, is that there has been no advance in this whole Brexit negotiations to the extent that a play that was written that time ago is still relevant now. It's set in 2020, and I'm the new Prime Minister. So in a way, we can get away with the fact that we're saying, well, it's, you know, this is a projected future.
Mm.
But, yeah, it's clever, and it's funny, and we're having great fun with it. We get a lot of... There's a few very big laughs, particularly about the idea that we might have to... drop the pound and adopt the euro if we were to ask to come back in again. At one point, I just say, can we just stop it? Can we just pretend it never happened? And I think there are so many people who think that, oh, God, can we just pretend it didn't happen and just go back to how it was, you know, because I mean, for my money, it's just a mess, really. I
yes.
really think it is. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, depending on what happens with these talks on Wednesday, tomorrow, you could end up actually being Prime Minister. You never know.
I know. I have to say, I'm much, much happier just doing a limited 3-week run pretending to be the Prime Minister than actually being the Prime Minister. I wouldn't envy anybody that job. I mean, whoever it is, of whatever political hue, what a difficult job they've got now.
Yes.
I mean, it seems to be absolutely, you're caught between a rock and a hard place. Whatever they do is going to be wrong. You know,
yes.
Don't envy them.
No, definitely not. Well, it's been a real pleasure chatting with you, Timothy Bentinck. Thank you so much for joining us. If listeners want to find out more about you and your very interesting and eclectic career, then Being David Archer is the book and Other Unusual Ways of Earning a Living. Timothy Bentinck, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.